welcome to the Decipher podcast. I have two guests with me today. I have Ryan Noon and Abhishek Agrawal, both from Material Security. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
All right. We've been trying to get this thing done for a while. Very busy schedules and pandemics have gotten in the way, so I'm happy to get you guys actually on here. Shout out to John O for hooking this up and making us do this and thinking it would be a good idea. Hopefully it'll turn out to be a good idea.
Historical inevitability, really.
But. Yeah, I think so, given the cross-section of people that we all know and all that. So there's a small list of things I wanted to talk to you guys about, but just from the start, Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about Material and the problem you guys are trying to solve and how you figured out why that was such a big problem?
Sure. Where to begin? I guess it all starts in 2016, like so much of the craziness that we talk about this year. And I'd left Dropbox. I used to work there. They devoured my last company. And I left, and I was living abroad in Berlin, actually, over the summer, and in summer 2016, and the John Podesta dude got hacked, you know, and I was like, obviously the newspapers just went totally nuts with it, you know, it was extremely germane to the election, but it's also just, it's like weird to read the email of a powerful person, you know, it's the same like kind of prurient, you know, with the Sony Pictures leak and HB Gary and Panama Papers. It's just like, that's a feeling, you know? And I think that's probably maybe why it was so bad is that we all amplified it because we were all so like obsessed with it. And I'm like an enterprise software, you know, person through and through. And so when I, you know, and I got really obsessed with it because when you're living abroad, you just read the newspapers of your home country, like nonstop, you know, you really like, you can't have nice things. And I got really into it because enterprise software is all about like solving problems, you know, and like clearly this is not just some like business section, you know, problem. It's like a front page, you know, everybody knows about this. Everyone's talking about the poor dude's risotto recipes, you know, like I have a friend of a friend whose like term paper was leaked in it because Podesta was teaching a class, you know, that he was, and all his friends made fun of him for his poor writing or something, you know, like, so, and so I got really into it. And so if enterprise software is about problems and you see this problem, you know, like I think I told somebody once, like, I don't get mad. I do market research, you know? And so
I was like,
yeah, no. And the nature of that problem is like, it was a dude's personal Gmail account, right? And so I started getting into like email security. Like I did security for grad school and I did, you know, analytics and data stuff for much of my professional life. And I was just like, how did this happen in this dude's personal Gmail account? Like where was Google in all of this? Which I think is that's 2016 is when, you know, people started asking that question in every possible context, you know, like Google, why didn't you know what to do? And Google, why didn't you save me? And Google, you know, why is it cold outside and all this stuff? So, so I had an idea for like, and frankly, like the entire email security industry did not care, right? It's like, you sell it to IT, you sell it to the CISO, you know, you ask people to change their MX records and you're good to go. It's just another firewall. You buy firewalls all day long. And like, you don't get to change MX records on gmail.com. So like, So like have fun, right? So like the obvious thing of like, well, should have blocked that phishing email that had Google on it. Like clearly, you know, now that we know that that could happen, you know, whatever, right? Like you just couldn't do it. And so I was like, well, how could we save this person? And Gmail's got an API. They've had it for years. It's not bad. But like it can't really build phishing blockers. So you can't even do the obvious thing with it. So like basically that's how I got into this problem, was just getting obsessed with that. And then we built a company that, you know, we actually sell to the fanciest companies in the world now and top of the market or whatever, but like we still protect personal accounts too. And the reason I bring up the Podesta story is not because we're here to make everybody protect all their executives' personal accounts. You should, right? And I think a lot of our customers know that, but like, you know, it's just, there's a lot of training in the market that personal accounts, you know, are not my problem or whatever, right? I think the best security people at the best organizations know that they have to kind of go and minister among the people and like protect you wherever you may roam, because it's nobody else's job to protect you and stuff like that, right? And we're we're you know, we're into that problem, but it's necessity is the mother of invention is basically the reason I brought it up. And there's no more greater necessity than, you know, protecting people like that, where like the future of like, you know, Western democracy relies upon, you know, people being able to have a modicum of data privacy.
Yeah. You know? The story of Podesta just ended up being really instructive for us when we started thinking about this problem, because really it came down to, as Ryan was alluding to, like, okay, everybody obsesses with how do you stop that kind of event from happening in the first place? How do you block the phishing email? And because we were playing with the API and because we were just kind of thinking about the problem a little differently, we asked this question of like, all right, so the guy's account got hacked, but why did it have to be like a catastrophe? Why did it have to be like as bad as it was? And that led us down this kind of idea of like, okay, what if you start with the assumption that, you know, accounts might get compromised, because there's honestly 100 different ways to compromise them. And you don't worry about just trying to block every bad attack coming in. You just think about from the perspective of what would someone actually want if they got into this thing? And can you mitigate those things? Can you actually make the prize less valuable rather than obsessing with how someone might get in? Because honestly, that's a losing battle. There's a lot of different ways in. And I think historically in email security, what we realized as we dug more into the space, because again, we were coming more from an analytics worldview, but as we dug more into the space, we realized people are just very obsessed with the nature of the attack rather than what is being attacked. But if you like switch your view a little bit, you start realizing that while there are like hundreds of ways in, there's only like a few different things people want once they're in. And so if you can reframe the problem to think about that, that, you know, leads to just it's a very fertile ground for new ideas. And that's kind of what led to the company. So today, Material, you know, what it focuses on is a huge visibility and analytics layer, but really our like kind of secret sauce and bread and butter is this idea of like, okay, so an account got compromised. How can you mitigate the consequences? How can you make the blast radius much smaller?
And if that sounds really intellectual, like, well, it obviously is, because Abhishek is very intellectual. Like I'm the dumb one, but like, it's like a seatbelt, honestly. Like we used to, you know, when you're in Silicon Valley, you got to have, you know, we're like Uber for pets or whatever, right? We used to say we're seatbelts for email, you know, because like a seatbelt doesn't make anybody a better driver, you know, like it makes me a better driver because my blood pressure goes down when I'm wearing it. But, you know, it's really about like, okay, just assume the bad thing's going to happen. And so in like the original demo for this company was like, we called it like the John Podesta demo. And now it is, you know, just, it's one of our more popular kind of add-ons for our product. And it's just like, yeah, I'm in your mailbox and I want to download all of it. And we're going to try and make that like harder or impossible for the bad guy. And you know, God willing, the bad guy gets greedy and hits a tripwire, you know, and then you can just kick him out. So,
yeah.
That ended up being like just mind blowing for folks, because they're just so like, you know, RSA will have assume compromise on the wall, you know, in like big banner, you know, but like products don't generally do that. Like, I think like Duo is honestly like, that's why we liked it so much, because it kind of got close. It's like, assume someone's got your password already. Like now what, you know? And so we kind of generalized that, you know, to assume bad thing has happened. Now what? And the reason we can do all this stuff is because, yeah, like every email account, broadly speaking, in a company now is either, you know, already an Office 365 or a G Suite account, or on its way to that, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we are all Gmail accounts now is like the way I would talk about it, you know. Yeah. So,
well, it's interesting when you guys, Ryan, you mentioned you guys didn't necessarily have security backgrounds when you got into it.
Security grad school at Stanford, I would argue, is not a security background. It's wow, it's a systems class and a math class, and it's a grad degree too. So you're basically just, you know, TAing the whole time and, you know, enjoying your, you know, stipend. So
yeah, which sounds nice, but you're living in Palo Alto, so that's not that bad. But
Menlo Park, but
all right, okay, close enough.
It's not fun. The downtown closes at 6:30.
Yeah, but this isn't like one of those things where you guys grew up as teenage hackers and like all you wanted to do was start a security company or do something like that. So like when you started
hacker in the more general sense of I like to break things and make things and whatever, but not in the like, yeah, I was arrested. You know, I was I was suspended from school for, you know, hacking the ADFS password or whatever, but that was because the admin told it to people and it got around and he needed scapegoats. And so we got a birthday cake afterwards, all of my friends that said, you know, happy birthday, cyber terrorists or whatever. So, so I have that story, but not as good as
that's
most.
A pretty good
not
story.
Yeah. And they threw us a pizza party because we were the best students that they'd ever had. So good times. They said, sorry, we realized what happened.
Sorry,
I'm not
going
to name names, but the guy who told the password eventually went to jail for laundering, for stealing money from the school. So.
Well, oh my God, you're stealing money from a school. What are you doing? Come on.
Yeah, no, it's public school, man.
Yeah, really?
That's
yeah,
an extra level of hell for stealing from a public school in Cleveland, Ohio.
So. Oh my God. Yeah, that's not good times. But so the email security problem that you guys were describing is, you know, people have been trying to fix this for 20 plus years, you know, and it was considered, probably still is, one of the more boring problems in security. Like,
because
people tend to ignore them. They think it's solved. Like you said, you put a firewall in front of it, you do a bunch of filtering, you throw shit in a bunch of different folders and be like, don't open those. And you tell everybody not to click on attachments and you're like, we fixed it. Yeah. Everything's cool, right? And maybe you set up 2FA in front of those accounts, hopefully. But people still open attachments. Like, that's part of everybody's jobs. You know, you have to read attachments. People send them to you all the time. And limiting the blast radius, as you put it, when something goes wrong is the difficult part of that. So how did you guys come up with the approach that you decided to actually take to that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, just going back to the, like, I'm trying to remember, you know, fall 2016, the ups and downs. This is double oof the year, to be clear. Like, I want to think that there were good years in between, but I don't know, I was working too much. But it was, I think, just like looking at, like, well, you know, it's sort of like in like Apollo 13 when they're like, you know, what are all the things that they have on the shuttle, you know, or not the shuttle, the LEM or whatever, right? Like, they throw them on a table and they start duct taping them together. And we were like, okay, well, we've got this like Gmail API, you know, okay, it's kind of built for like making hip mail clients and Salesforce plugins, but like maybe it could do some security or something. You know, wow, like we've got like MFA and SSO is like a hot trend, you know, everyone's buying these things. And so we're like, wait, so if like everyone in the company already has like some MFA mechanism or like an app in their pocket that they've been trained to access and stuff, then like we actually have like a side channel that like is just some extra, it's not perfect, obviously, right? But it's basically like a super, you know, like a red phone directly to the user that like maybe the attacker didn't totally compromise in many realistic threat models. And so, and then one cool thing about the Gmail API and frankly the Microsoft APIs, and this exists on personal accounts and work accounts, is like you can do more stuff than just like read email with them. You can actually like kind of change emails in mailboxes if you kind of know what you're doing and you're really careful about it. It's not super obvious that that can work. So that those were kind of, and then obviously the third building block that we just sort of subconsciously brought to the table is really good data and analytics, because that's our background, right? Like Abhishek and I used to be in charge of like thousands of nodes of Hadoop at Dropbox, you know, like it's so the.
Yeah, I think also I think you were kind of getting at this earlier, Dennis, but part of it was just that because we didn't grow up in like, you know, the security industry, at least for our professional lives, like we didn't immediately look at the problem as just kind of, I think the way that a lot of security, you know, products would approach it, which is, okay, there's some attack, let's analyze the attack, let's build like, you know, some sort of like repeatable process to try to detect these types of attacks and then stop them. It just wasn't how we were like trained to think about it. Instead, we were like, well, what actually happened? Oh, someone put all of this guy's email on WikiLeaks and then the internet had a field day. Well, why were they able to put all his email on the WikiLeaks? Oh, it's because Google lets you download all of it and has like 10 years of archival history. Well, just because you have archival history, why do you have to have all the juicy stuff? Like, it's really, it's sort of like approaching it a little bit from first principles of like what actually happened that was bad. Because we used to say it's not that like Podesta got phished that's bad. If you think about it, it's like, that's not what's bad. What happened to get him.
Yeah.
That's what's bad is that all his emails on the internet. What's bad is that someone used his email account to then jump to his iCloud account. Like, these are the things that are actually bad.
not the fall, the impact. I love that expression, right? Like,
so, yeah. So I think it is a little bit of, yeah, you can kind of get blinders from thinking about a problem in different, even if it's different scenarios, you're kind of trained to think about the problem the same way. And we just didn't have that because we come more from like a systems background or an analytics background. Like me personally, I come from like a productivity and product design background. So,
and a physics background and a laser, whatever. Background.
Right. And a lot of this stuff is more, yeah. Yeah. Lasers were my thing in college. But
it was like real genius.
Call a laser boy if you want. I have done that before.
No, definitely not real genius, but we were doing a lot of, I was an electrical engineer in college, and we were doing a lot of work with lasers to detect different types of gases, actually. So it was like basically breathalyzers. I was working on breathalyzers.
But it was like a cancer breathalyzer. Like, yeah, you're not a narc. Like,
it was for alcohol. It was for more sensitive things. But anyway, yeah, I think we just approached it much more from a perspective of like, okay, what was the actual end result that was bad? And only later, as we got more into the space, did we realize that actually this is a very well formalized way of thinking about things in security. It's not new. Like, people talk about threats versus vulnerabilities versus consequences. This is like how you think about risk. Mm-hmm. It's just that a lot of products don't really productize that thinking. And, you know, we happen to come up with one or two feature ideas that do. And that's kind of what led to some of our first products.
It was one or two to start. Now it's a suite, of course. You got to be a suite. You can't be enterprise style. No one likes a point solution. Yeah.
Full featured platform.
Oh yeah. God. I never use the word platform. I never use the word AI. I never use the word ML. It's like, no, just stop.
Attaboy. Yeah. Don't. No.
Friends don't let friends say machine learning.
Well, I think one of the things that you were mentioning, Abhishek, that I like that idea of bringing not non-security, but some outside influences to thinking about a security problem, because I do tend to think that the security industry is very insular, and you get a lot of kind of groupthink, like any industry. You know, once you start trying to tackle harder and harder and harder problems, you all sort of look at them the same way, because if everybody has the same background and the same kind of stack of knowledge that they're leaning on, it's harder to look at it with fresh eyes. And so
it's like, we'll fight the pandemic with a tax cut or something. You know, it's like, if all you have is a hammer.
Yeah. And I mean, I also think the larger problem is that a lot of enterprises didn't consider how much of their IP was sitting in their employees' inboxes. Like, they don't realize, like, it's not necessarily the product plans or like your customer database that is your crown jewels. It's your, you know, account executive's inbox and your CEO's inbox. You know, that's where a lot of your really unguarded information is just sitting there for the taking.
Yeah, it's like best practices, like, we're all formed when you had 50 megabyte exchange quotas or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, now everyone is a Gmail account. So even a year of corporate email is bananas, you know, and a lot of companies have a lot more than that. So.
Yeah, Ryan makes fun of me whenever I say this, but I love email. I really do. I think it's just like an incredible tool that, like, you know, even this podcast, like, we got intro to you and to Donna, like, because of email. It's because we all have this like open sort of network we can communicate on. But in the business world, it's just become this kind of like incredible, not just like communication protocol, but like just big fat app that is a source of truth, like you're saying, for a lot of different things, because it's kind of the great unifier. Like, oh, you don't have an API? Or, well, we'll just send email notifications. Oh, you don't have, you know, you want to like verify something? We'll just do it over email. You want an easy way to make sure Dennis is Dennis? Oh, well, enter your email address. You want an easy way to make sure he actually works at Duo or Cisco? Well, if he has an @cisco.com address, that must mean he's at Cisco. It's just this shortcut for a lot of different things. And it's also this kind of become this source of truth for a lot of different things. And because of that, the idea of just protecting it as the way to send messages is silly. It's like, you have to kind of approach securing it from that reality that it's like much more than that now.
Yeah, we like to say that it's like, email's not a NetSec problem, or at least everything you've ever bought or thought about for email from a security perspective is basically a firewall. It's a NetSec thing, but like, the world could use some email AppSec is kind of how we think about it. So
yeah, that's totally true. And I mean, I give credit to Google in some respects for recognizing that for a lot of people, their Gmail inbox is like their internet identity, you know, like they've put a lot of pieces in place to help people protect that, you know, the advanced protection program, 2FA, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they have a good system for, you know, regaining access to your inbox if it actually does end up getting taken away from you. But, you know, years and years ago, you know, hackers would tell me, like, the first thing I try to do, you know, in a pen test or something like that, or if I'm going after someone, you try and get access to their email. If you've got that, you've got them, you know, and it's no different for a corporation.
Yeah,
no, I mean, you can just like, people always forget the, like, you know, the, oh, I forgot my password, and then it sends you an email. Like, people are like, well, I've got 2FA, and we're like, well, the vast majority of apps, like, assume that if you've lost the first factor, that, like, you know, like, at least email is the passport to your identity, and it's, you know, it's what Abhishek was saying. So, yeah, no, it's, there's, like, it, people think about this stuff. There's, like, a Brian Krebs blog post from, like, 2013 that we show people sometimes. It's just, like, the value of a hacked email account, and it's, like, he's got a big picture of, like, how your whole life is linked into this, and I mean, and it's also, I mean, the Google thing is like, they've done a great job of bringing like fairly decent security to billions of people, you know, like that's, that earns them a spot. And, you know, whatever hell some people, you know, put Google in, like, I think bringing okay security to billions of people and pretty good security to people that can self-select for it, like, that's awesome. But yeah, the, like, you pushed the wrong app to the Google App Store or something, and then they ban your Gmail account, and then you basically die from the internet. Like, those are also terrifying stories. Yeah. So there's, I think, in a lot of ways, it's like our society, you know, it's like the idea of, like, I have a passport that I can use to travel to countries. That's clearly obsolete this year, you know, but like my Gmail account's my real passport, except there's no congressman I can call if it gets messed up, you know? So.
Right.
I don't know, I think we should fix that at some point, but for now it is kind of cool that I can have my whole life in my email, and it's pretty cool that I can email anyone in the whole world. It has the same feel that the internet itself does, right? You can tell they were born alongside each other, you know, like there's so much to love about the internet underneath all of the things to not love about it, and there's so many things to love about email, right? It is the push mechanism of the internet, really, you know? So We got to protect it. We got to save it. We got to believe in it. It's not just going to be WhatsApp from here on out, you know?
You know, coming back to one other thing you were saying earlier, just about different backgrounds coming into security, I think one other thing that allowed us to build some of the stuff we did early on is because maybe you could call this even naive, but we really weren't afraid to build features that end users would see in an enterprise. And that tends to not be the case for like 99% of security products.
Right.
Because I think one, to be fair, like a lot of the problems that those security products are solving, you know, are not necessarily things that an end user would like understand or appreciate in an enterprise. But I think partially it's also because historically there hasn't been as much awareness or appetite from end users. And then also it's just hard when you have to build a product that end users have to use, because now you have to worry about usability, you have to worry about friction, you have to worry about feedback, you have to, like, what's the brand? Is it trustworthy? All this stuff. And this is why, like, Duo has always been kind of like a weird inspiration for us, because we're like, no, this was a product that like actual end users in an enterprise used and didn't hate, you know? And like, one of the shocking things to me personally was like when we started this company, and even when we were like just kind of like, you know, floating the ideas we had around and just trying to get feedback on them, we would consistently get asked by CISOs and by directors of securities, like, about the end user experience. And it's like, we've all heard like consumerization of IT and all that. And like, you know, we were at Dropbox, obviously, like I had heard these things, but I hadn't quite realized how much even the like security community had internalized it, because I think we realized that if you roll out a product that is like secure, but it actually makes like productivity worse, what's going to happen is people will just reject it and try to like sidestep it. And in the process, ironically, make themselves less secure. And so early on, we kind of like took this decision. We're like, hey, when it comes to security versus productivity, that's normally labeled as a trade-off. And in some instances, it absolutely is. But allowing yourself to think that it doesn't have to be a trade-off, and in fact, you have to like cater to productivity while catering to security, if you're going to build a product that actually works, is really important, because otherwise, you know, people will sidestep it. So things like Duo, you know, that whole class of products where it's just, it's in with the end user, but it's kind of thinking about the end user's experience is really valuable. And like, that's kind of a lot of what we do in our product too.
Yeah, I feel like the super hip, you know, Post-it notes on glass people and the hardcore security people, like, you know, the UX people and the security people really need to be friends, okay? Because like, if you're willing to like actually show your face as a security product to the average user, like, you know, the colors of the rainbow are limitless to you and your ability to actually like be effective. You know, it's like it's the hammers that the security industry reaches for, you know, so that everything may be a nail, are just like blocking things and going beep, you know, like alerts and block, alerts and block, you know. And it's like, okay, well, you know, bring the user in. And you see great products that do this. It's not just the MFA things, you know, the crowdsourcing, the Slack bots of, hey, you know, your friendly neighborhood security bots, just checking in that you meant to do this. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of awareness here. You know, we're not like visionaries or anything, but it's just like, I wish that more people thought about the user, right? Like go in and grab the super hip UX people from whatever app they're building right now and like, you know, save the world, please, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, all credit to Jono and Doug for, I mean, that's exactly what they did when they started Duo, is they hired a designer first and then a bunch of really smart UX people and were like, make this look like something that people want to use, you know, not just some kludgy thing that people are going to try and sidestep, like you were saying, Abhishek, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that, it sounds simple and it's a simple idea, but it's complicated as hell to actually get done.
For sure.
You know? Yeah. And it's, I think, again, that goes back to not just having the, you know, a straight up security or engineering mindset and having a different kind of broader way of looking at things and being like, okay, would I want to use this? Like, if this shows up in my inbox and somebody tells me tomorrow, like, hey, you have this new email security tool, am I going to look for every way around it? Or am I going to be like, oh, cool, that's a good idea.
You know? Yeah, we've had this thing on our own emails since like day one. And yeah, believe me, if it like caused us pain because of how much we use email for our jobs, we would like, you know, the dog fooding is very real for us.
Well, it has to be. That's, you know. Yeah, go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, I mean, but Abs is totally right with the like, you know, the security versus productivity trade-off. Like, no, smash that. Like, throw that away. Like, you have to choose both. And it's that isn't just like some, you know, rampant, you know, defiant like iconoclasm. It's that like, you know, like when you have a seatbelt, like I'm going to do the seatbelt thing again, okay? Like Abhishek's going to eye roll, but like it's it like if I didn't have seatbelts, I would drive like 15 miles an hour, you know? Like my productivity is higher because of my security, right? When we say, hey man, like if we could stop the bad stuff from leaking, or, you know, hey, you know how those phishing emails get through? Like maybe we can mitigate like a lot of that for you. It takes people being like, well, I guess I was going to roll out a 30-day email deletion policy because I was just about had it, you know? But now I guess I'll give them a year, you know, like, it's like, not like, you know, you're not enforcing like, you know, organizational amnesia and like corporate lobotomies on people because of that, you know, and we run into people that are like, you know what, email, you know, it's not a right, it's a privilege. So we're going to give the average white collar knowledge worker person at this company, they're going to have a special need for email. And I'm like, oh, wow, that sounds horrible. But like, that's where a lot of people are at now, you know? And it's like, that's, you know, me driving 15 miles an hour in my, you know, 18, you know, 90 car without seatbelts, you know? And like, and what's also funny is like, people will be like, well, you know, email's old. Like, why are you, you know, why do you think you can fix it or whatever? And like the car and seatbelt analogy goes real deep. We have a manifesto on our site that when we finally came out of stealth mode this summer, like we put up a manifesto and I like, you know, did some digging into this seatbelt thing. Cause I'm like, I got to put seatbelts in this manifesto. Like it's like not talking about workers of the world and means of production in the communist manifesto, right? You got to have seatbelts in it. And I was like, cars were like pretty fast by like the turn of the century. You see these videos of like race cars in the 20s that will clearly kill you if they hit something. And like the 3-point seatbelt, not invented until like the 50s by some dude in like Sweden with Volvo. And then they like donated the patent and whatever. And it's like, like yeah, cars were way older than email at that point, and they were still, like, you know, mangling people, and it was like, oh yeah, a seatbelt, like a piece of cloth that mounts in three places, like, mind blown, right? So, like, it's never too late to fix something that's really broken.
Yeah, and it, yeah, email security has been, like I said, people kind of put it to the side because they thought it was a boring problem, and they're like, yeah, you just put some blinky boxes in front of it and tell people not to
bumps in the wire. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it just doesn't work. And like you were saying, Abhishek, email is still, like, no matter how many apps come out, or, you know, Signal, WhatsApp, whatever, people still use email. I can't tell you how many, like, pitches I've gotten in the last 20 years about, like, this is our email killer, like, this is, yeah, it. And I'm like, oh, okay, you guys are the one. Like, I don't think so. Like, email was one of the first, you know, actual usable things on the internet for, you know, way back in the day all the way up till now. I don't think it's going anywhere now.
Yeah, what I've learned is that even in my past careers, I was at Microsoft and then Dropbox, like, just in collaboration and productivity, people are greedy for more channels. So it's rare that channels get replaced. They just become additive, right? So it's like, yeah, we use Slack a ton, but we now use it for other things we talk about. It hasn't replaced that many emails, right? It's just like, emails are like the asynchronous communication, but Slack is the synchronous communication. And like, we use Signal too. That's for, like, you know, extra sensitive stuff or stuff we would rather really not be recorded anywhere or whatever.
Yeah.
We use WhatsApp with, like, in my case, like, with my international friends, like, especially. So these things are additive. They rarely replace each other. And email ends up being that kind of, like, lowest common denominator that, you know, everyone has. And so a lot of things just will sit there. Yeah. Regardless.
The mental image we use is after the apocalypse, it's cockroaches scurrying around emailing each other. So
eating Twinkies.
Yeah.
you're totally right about the additive part of that, though, Abhishek. Like, I have so many Slack channels, and there's people that, like, I work with, but I've also been friends with for a long time that are, you know, or I went to college with, that are all in, like, four different Slack groups at the same time with me, and also email and, like, Signal threads and stuff like that. And I never know, like, which one do they pay the most attention to? How do I, you know, and you're just like, ah, God, can I just have, yeah. And you're just like, they're like, now join Discord. I'm like, no, no, no.
I'm calling it here.
That's it.
It'll get cut off. Yeah. Discord's too
I know.
Fun. I guess. But I mean, like, the arc of history is humans communicating with each other more. So, like, we're gradually gluing ourselves back together into one sort of mega super consciousness. And I think, you know, email is still going to be part of that. You know?
Yeah, I think that's true. So one of the other things I wanted to ask you guys about is what it's been like trying to get a business off the ground, especially this year. I mean, you mentioned, Ryan, that you guys just came out of stealth mode this summer. You know, perfect time, nothing going on.
Oh yeah, no.
Grab some attention. What's it like, aside from the, you know, challenges everybody's facing, what's it been like for you guys trying to get things, you know, kind of ramped up during one of the worst years in human history? How's that going?
I'll go first. Undoubtedly, we each have reflections on the, you know, the dumpster fire that is 2020, and trying to build in a year that refuses to stop destroying. So I mean, I've been around in the Valley, and I'm an old timer at, you know, age 33, but it's because I moved out here when I was 18, and going to Stanford for undergrad is kind of being subjected to all of this against your will. You're like, I just want to, like, meet friends and figure out who I'm going to be when I grow up. And they're like, no, Series A. So you have heroes, right? You have people that have survived, you know, 2000 and 2008 and whatever. And why did I go to grad school in the first place? I'm like a mini baby boomer where I avoided Vietnam by going to grad school, you know, like I avoided the job market in the summer of 2008, you know, by interning at, you know, at a social media company over the summer and then going to security grad school, you know? So, smart. And it's like, honestly, when things are tough, and it's weird, this year is extra weird because, like, the universe is on fire, but, like, capital markets are, like, you know, rampant and raging and happy and weird. And, you know, it's like Wile E. Coyote running off a cliff or whatever. It doesn't know if he's falling yet. We'll see how long this goes. But I mean, adversity builds great companies, honestly, right? Like, Or even just things like, you know, the why do I have to go to your office to talk to you about our product for an hour? Like, you don't really want that. Like, you'd rather, you know, and it's like, so I'm you're able to meet more people. You're able to, you know, do awesome podcasts. Like, people adapt and like, yeah. You know, adversity. It's not like we're not like, you know, COVID ambulance chasing or anything. We're not saying, oh, well, everyone's working from home, so email's more dangerous than ever. Yeah, that's all true. There's a temptation to overreact, and it's you know, kind of straight up like Hobbesian in startup land sometimes. And you see people like looking for every advantage that they possibly can and every straw that they can grasp, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. Fundamentally, it's like people have a little bit more time. People are happy to take meetings. So, it's like employees are honestly happy to have a great environment to work hard. Like, you know, it's like, it's almost more of a year for sowing than reaping in a lot of ways. And so not as apocalyptic, honestly, as I thought it could be. And so, and we have great investors, great employees, great customers. And so we're just trying to do the right thing, you know, like the only in a world of insanity, like close your eyes and do the right thing, you know? So.
Yeah. I think
a weird sentiment.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would add to that is, you know, when you think about just growth from a business perspective, I think especially in security, like you mentioned earlier, it is a little insular, but the flip side of that is that if you've got something that people like, then they're also willing to talk about it and like tell other practitioners about it. And we've been super lucky to just have extremely supportive early customers that are, I mean, you know, when you're buying kind of an early stage product, you are definitely going to encounter some rough edges. That's just part of the game. Sure. But I think it takes like special customers to be able to see past that, understand kind of what the like broader vision is. And then not only that, but like go evangelize for you. And I think we've had customers doing that. So from a pure like, how are we going to build the business? How are we going to have an RSA booth? Like we haven't had that issue because...
Like, don't have to worry about that this year.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about it. But also, the lack of that isn't like something we are terrified by because you know we're growing through in my opinion, one of the best ways was just folks that we've made happy telling other folks about us. And so that kind of aspect of the security industry, where like if something is working for someone, they're eager to tell their peers about it because you know they want to share best practices. That's been really cool, and I think we've really benefited from that. I think for me, the biggest challenge from a business building perspective is what Ryan was sort of alluding to. It's just like the culture and employees and just how to, you know, keep that sense of camaraderie, keep that sense of like, just like human connection, right?
Yeah.
Like we've hired people in our company during this pandemic that we've never met face to face. And that's crazy. And I know every company's in that position, but when you're like, you know, 30% of your company is like that, or 40% of your company, that's even weirder, right? And like, so as a startup, you almost feel that pain even more because you're like, as a big company, yeah, you hired some people, but they're a small fraction of the whole organization. You can absorb that. But as a startup, if all of a sudden like half the people have never met each other, it's just a little weird. And you know, we were kind of remote from the start. So it's not like COVID changed that a ton for us. But what we did used to do is meet up on a pretty regular cadence and like fly everyone.
Once a quarter, everybody hangs out. You know, you need that. You need the connection.
And when we do that, every business leader, whether it's a startup or like a public company, I know is thinking about this, which is just what are the sort of substitutes for that in the pandemic world that will still get you the gains? Because I think everybody understands that like the more you can kind of cultivate those bonds within your team, the better it's going to be. It's going to create resilience, honestly. But if you can't do that, what's the next best thing? That's like the top of mind for every single leader I talk to.
Yeah, and whoever cracks that problem, either a vaccine or fix that problem, like right now, please. You know, preferably.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there are some things that we're going to keep from this, you know, totally shit show era, right? Like the why would I pointlessly go to your office when neither one of us wants that for the average meeting? You know, like
totally.
if it's a really, you know, big customer and we want to go and celebrate or something, then obviously great. You know, these are all human relationships, but like you just like there are things that we can learn from this. Right. And like, there are, there are, you know, cataclysms are the time where you cast off, you know, societal dead weight, you know, or like, you know, maybe World War II, like you put half of your population to work and then it takes a generation, but then eventually they stay in the workforce, you know, like progress happens in calamity, you know, but yeah. I kind of miss everybody, you know,
that's I so
really
true.
Miss everybody.
I know. Yes, I really do. You know, that's, yeah. Oh man, that might be a good place to leave off, but
yeah, well, ending on a high note.
Yeah. Great. All right, guys, thank you so much for doing this. This is a really good time. We'll have to do it again. Hopefully, maybe we can all meet up in person. And
yeah. Thanks so much for having us. This was really fun.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Dennis.
All right. All right, guys, take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Godspeed, everybody.
Adios. Bye. While you were hacking the planet.